Welcome to the Finding True Health podcast. Are you ready to reject diet culture without rejecting your health? Do you want to feel a sense of peace around food and your body while also creating habits that will help you feel your best each day? Hey, I'm Jenna, a registered dietitian, a committed follower of Jesus Christ, and a middle-aged mom. Not long ago, I felt like I was at war with my body. I believed I needed to reach some arbitrary goal weight to be healthy and happy. But one day, God helped me realize that I was focused on the wrong thing. So I began to treat my body with the love and respect it deserves through both my thoughts and my actions. And that new focus has made all of the difference. Now I love helping other women find true health for themselves so they can enjoy more energy, better moods, and greater peace in their own lives. I'm excited to get started, so let's dive in. Hey there, welcome to the Finding True Health podcast. Thank you so much for being here with me today. First of all, I'm so sorry I didn't get a podcast episode out last week. The craziness of the end of summer met up with the craziness of the beginning of the school year, and I just couldn't make it happen. So I apologize for that. But now all of my kids are in school, all five of them. This is the first time in almost 17 years that I have not had a baby or toddler or preschooler or sometimes two or three at the same time at home. And I have so much more time on my hands. So I'm excited to start podcasting more regularly again. And I'm also super excited because I have been working on a new program that I'm now able to launch now that I've got some more time, and it's going to be awesome. And I'm going to be giving more details about that next week. So make sure you tune in next week to hear all about that. All right, on to our topic for today. Today I want to go over four words. They all start with the letter R. And these are all things that I see creep in and lead people to self-sabotage. I see it in my own life. I see it in the lives of others. These are super common. So I wanted to go over them today. The first R word is resistance. I don't know about you, but often when someone makes a suggestion to me that would require me to put in a little bit or maybe a lot of effort, then automatically my brain is like, nah, I don't think that'd work for me. I'm good. And oftentimes, once I kind of let that simmer a little bit, I might realize, oh, that actually is a good idea. Maybe I should try it. And then if I try it very often, then I realize, oh, that wasn't as hard as my brain was making it out to be. But for some reason, just our initial reaction to ideas and suggestions and words of advice is resistance. So I dove in and did a little research as to why this is, and I think we could all guess resistance to change is actually very normal, very common. It's a natural part of being human, and it actually stems from a number of physical and psychological and sociological needs. So some of these needs are the need for certainty. We want to know what to expect in our lives. We like knowing exactly what's going to be going on in our day and having our days go fairly similar day in and day out so that we just have that certainty of how things are going to go. And adding a goal or something new to our lives kind of destroys that certainty. Another need that we have is the need to just be able to think things through. So sometimes it's simply a matter of, I just need some time to think about this option or this suggestion or advice for a little while. And that's a completely normal and natural thing we would want to do. Another need we have is the need for routine. This is a wonderful thing that our brains do because it allows us to do so much more throughout the day because we don't have to think so deeply about everything we're doing. But it also means that we often don't want to change our routines. We are comfortable with our routines. We're creatures of habit, and we want to just keep those routines how they are. We also have the need for self-esteem and for confidence. And when we have the thought of maybe making a new goal or trying something new, we might be worried that we aren't good enough, or we might be worried that we're just going to fail if we try. Maybe we've even tried that thing before in the past and we feel like we've failed in our eyes, and so we don't want to try it again because that would damage our self-confidence and self-esteem. We also have a very strong need for meaningful relationships, and so we could be worried about what others might think of us, or we might worry that they'll see us fail. We might even worry that they'll be mad if we change. As crazy as it sounds, oftentimes people do get upset when they see other people succeed or improve in some way. And we might be worried that we will lose a friend or a relationship if we change in any way, be it good or bad. And then finally, we have this need for security and comfort. We like to stay in our comfort zones. Change usually requires some level of discomfort. Some of those changes might be physically uncomfortable. Others might just take more effort from a mental or an emotional standpoint. And since our brains are wired to seek pleasure and avoid pain, then it's natural that they'd be resistant to anything that doesn't seem to serve one of those purposes. Which, by the way, is why it's important to find healthy behaviors that we find enjoyable as much as possible to help speak to that portion of our brain. So these are all good needs. The need for certainty and routine and meaningful relationships, these aren't bad things. But you can see that these needs can all get in our way of progressing and trying new things and improving. I was trying to think of a personal example in my life of when this has happened, and I thought of one recently. Actually, it happened just last week. A while ago, my sister Kayla commented that she really enjoys going to the gym. She enjoys going to classes because they tend to push her more, push her to work out harder when she's in a group or an exercise class. And so I kind of thought about it for a minute and considered joining a gym and maybe trying out some classes, but kind of immediately my brain was like, you're good. It's going to take too much time. It's going to cost too much money. It's going to be too hard. Your current exercise routine is just fine. And it's true. I did have a good exercise routine at the moment, and I'm actually pretty good at pushing myself when I'm doing cardio, where I usually actually just allow my exercise machines to help push me along. But to be honest, I'm not very good at pushing myself when it comes to strength training. That's always been something I just don't enjoy. It's harder for me to really work on that area of my fitness. So recently I've been feeling a little bit bored with my workout routine and feeling like I might need a change. And I found myself kind of getting a little bit lazy as I've been working out. And I just got the sense that I needed to mix things up. So I decided to test out some classes at a local gym. And I ended up going to a weight training class last Tuesday. And it's funny, I actually didn't really feel like I was pushing myself super hard. I mean, I was definitely pushing myself harder than I would have at home on my own. But after that class, I was so sore for like an entire week. I obviously worked my muscles a lot harder than they're used to being worked. And I actually really enjoyed the class. So, Kayla, if you're listening, I stand corrected. Absolutely, I agree that going to workout classes can help push us to work out a little bit harder. So thank you for that suggestion. Now, I want to make it clear here that I don't think that workout classes are for everybody. I'm not saying that that's the way you have to choose to work out. I'm not even saying you have to push yourself super hard if you don't want to when working out. I just know for me that doing something like that would be really beneficial for me at this stage. So what do you do? What should you do if you find your brain resisting change? You want to make a goal, you want to change something, but you've got this part of your brain that is just really resisting that. How can you overcome that? Well, the first step is to be nice to yourself. I feel like I say this really often, but I also feel like we women seem to need to hear it very often. So just recognize that there are good reasons for your resistance. There's nothing wrong with you. It doesn't mean that you're not able to change. Doesn't mean that you should just throw your hands in the air and give up and not try. You can just recognize that that's how your brain is wired, and thank your brain for trying to protect you and for watching out for all those needs that we went over. The second thing I would suggest is to acknowledge that your resistance has a leg to stand on. It's valid. Give that portion of your brain a little bit of airtime. Don't just try to shove the resistance aside, shove it down in the basement, and try to just push through it. Give it a moment in the sunlight. So let's say that you want to stop eating ice cream every night. Let's be honest, eating ice cream every night is fun. It tastes good. It makes us feel good for the time that we're eating it. It can be really comforting and enjoyable. You have very good reasons to being resistant to giving up that pleasure in your life. So of course, a part of you does not want to make that goal. But once you've acknowledged and recognized that portion, then don't dwell there. The next step would be to gently remind your brain that you're safe, you're not going to do anything dangerous here, and then focus on the potential positives. Maybe remind your brain that, yes, we're going to miss eating the ice cream and there's going to be some downsides, but we're going to be able to sleep better and we're going to have more energy and just feel better overall. And we're going to spend less money because we won't have to buy as much ice cream. Try and focus on those positive parts of making the change. And it might also be helpful to remind your brain of changes that you've made in the past that have improved your life. Maybe changes that were a little bit hard at first, but over time they got easier and you recognize the benefits of achieving that goal. All right, let's move on to the second. It's actually the second and third R's. I'm going to lump these two together because they have a lot of overlap. And these R's are rebellion and revenge. Another need that we have as humans that we didn't go over in the last section is the need for control. We want to know that we have a choice. We need to be able to decide our own actions. Anyone who has raised kids knows how strong this need for control can be. It works much better to give a child a few options to choose between rather than to just say, hey, this is how it is, whether you like it or not, you have no say in the matter. And sometimes, of course, as parents, we have to do things like that, just say, because I said so type things. But we are much less likely to have an argument or to have a meltdown or a tantrum if we give our child a choice and a little bit of control over their lives. Actually, research shows that the greater our levels of autonomy, so the greater we feel in control of our lives, the greater our levels of motivation. The more we feel in control, the more we're going to be motivated to just make healthy choices without feeling forced or pressured to do so. Now, some of us have maybe more naturally rebellious personalities than others. Some people have a greater need for control. Maybe they're more independent. These are good leaders. These are strong personalities. And these types of people just really resist being told what to do. And then there are other people. I tend to be a little bit more submissive and kind of more of an obedient personality. I, to be honest, prefer to follow rather than lead. So I don't always mind people telling me what to do. But even I still need to feel in control of my life. I do not like to feel like I'm being pressured or forced into doing anything. So no matter your personality type, feeling in control is still very, very important to all of us. When it comes to health, maybe you are sick to death of being told what and how you should eat. You might be fed up by your doctor or your husband or your mother who is really pushing you to lose weight or to give up sugar, or maybe they're micromanaging everything you eat, or they're just casually commenting on your food choices or your portion sizes throughout the day. Someone who is in that situation is naturally going to want to rebel. They want to assert their independence, and so they are going to intentionally or non-intentionally sabotage their health so that the person bothering them doesn't get all the power. Now, if you're a more submissive type like me, then you might continue to be, quote, obedient on the outside and in public and in front of these people, but then you might rebel in private. Maybe you'll eat larger amounts of some of the forbidden foods that they've said you can't have, and you find yourself eating a lot more than you normally would just to prove that you still have some control over your life and your eating habits. Now, maybe it's not a person you're upset at or feel controlled by. Maybe it's just diet culture in general. Maybe you're frustrated by the time and the money that you wasted after years and years of dieting and all the years you spent believing the lies that you have to be thin in order to be healthy and happy and beautiful. I had a client tell me that she would just sit and listen to a particular intuitive eating podcast, not mine, but a different one, while just eating pleasure foods the whole time. And I imagine that she was just feeling a sense of freedom and control back over her life and kind of using that as a way to rebel against diet culture as she learned all that it had stolen from her. So in intuitive eating, we call this portion of ourselves the diet rebel. This is when you're just so fed up with and often really mad at diet culture or, again, a particular person that you rebel by swinging all the way to the other end of the pendulum. Maybe you refuse to eat any type of vegetable, or you see how many cookies you can eat before your husband catches you, or even before you have a chance to stop yourself. There's a story of Janie in the Intuitive Eating book, and I just want to read the little passage here. It says, Janie had a strong diet rebel voice. Every time her mother put her on a diet as a child, Janie's sneak eating would escalate. The diet rebel voice was Janie's primary guiding force as a child and as an adult. Janie would hang out at her friends' homes so she could eat as much of their treats as she could. A large child, Janie became larger as an adult. When her ex-husband carried on with the parental diet admonishment messages, Janie's silent diet rebel became loud and angry. It was her forget you inner voice that directed her to go against any rules imposed upon her, which resulted in reactive eating. Janie's boundaries were being invaded everywhere she turned. In order to protect her autonomy, Janie's diet rebel was overpowering all the other voices to help keep her independent. Yet it only ended up in private food riots of overeating. And it goes on to say, when the diet rebel rules the roost, self-destruction always ensues. Rebellious behavior often has no limits, and severe reactive eating may be the result. So what do you do if you find this rebellion and this drive for revenge creeping up? Well, first, it's important to recognize that in most cases, you're really just hurting yourself. When we slow down and think about it, it doesn't make sense that you would harm your own health out of revenge for somebody else. You're hurting yourself even further because someone else is hurting you in other ways. And why give them even more power to harm you? Evelyn and Elise, the authors of Intuitive Eating, suggest that we turn that diet rebel into the rebel ally. They encourage us to use that energy to stand up for yourself and to set boundaries. They say, use your mouth for words instead of acting out with food in a direct but polite way. So you might need to confront the people in your life making unsolicited, completely unwarranted comments and ask them to stop. Honestly, nobody has the right to make comments about your food choices or your body, unless, of course, you ask for their comments or opinions. And if it's diet culture that you're mad at, then, of course, listening to podcasts like this, reading books, following body positive Instagram accounts, things like that will help you retrain your brain and pull you out of diet culture so that you can leave it all behind. Okay, the fourth and final R that I want to talk about is resentment. Resentment often shows up as phrases like, it's not fair, or as feelings of jealousy. We resent others because they seem to have or are able to do something that we think that we can't have or do, or something that we want. Maybe it looks like, well, my husband gets to eat chips and donuts all night, but I don't get to, and that's just not fair. And so maybe you start eating those chips and donuts at night out of resentment because it's not fair that your husband can, but you can't. Or maybe you resent the fact that you're in a bigger body than your friend or your sister, or your neighbor, or your husband, and you feel like that's just not fair. I have three amazing little sisters. I just talked about Kayla earlier, and I know I've mentioned Joy and Kim in past episodes. And not only are my sisters some of the most kind and intelligent and incredible women you'll ever meet, they also happen to be very beautiful on the outside. And they all happen to be in small bodies. So growing up, I used to get pretty jealous and resentful, if I'm being honest, at times. And I would think, it's just not fair. Like, why was I born with a larger frame and they were all born with petite frames? Or why do I have a slower metabolism or just seem to always be struggling with excess weight or whatever it was? And now that I've done the work to rewire my brain and now that I realize that one body type is no better or worse than any other body type, I don't feel those feelings of jealousy or resentment anymore. But maybe you do feel that it's unfair that you're in a larger body because it can be difficult, let's be honest. In our society, absolutely, there are unfair things about how people in larger bodies are treated, assumptions made about them, all those things. And let's say that that resentment leads you to go on a crash diet or leads you to do something else that will ultimately harm your body in an effort to shrink it. When we think it's not fair, then our brains naturally want to make it fair somehow, even though that often leads to self-sabotage, like eating the chips and donuts or going on a crash diet. And oftentimes, it's literally impossible to make the situation fair in many cases. So what do we do? What do we do if we find our brains turning to resentment? First, again, acknowledge that your brain is right. Much of life really isn't fair, and that's okay. I find myself telling my kids this all of the time. Yes, it's true. Certain things in life are not fair. So now what? How do we want to show up in a world where everything isn't 100% fair all of the time? Making choices that affect our health from a place of resentment is not going to help make life any more fair, and it's definitely not going to help us reach our goals. And then once you've acknowledged that, then you can also remind your brain that actually much of life is fair. One thing that's fair is we all have agency. You really could eat those chips and donuts every night if you want to. You have every right in the world to eat as many treats as you'd like all day long. Take back your power. Nobody is forcing you to make food choices. If they are, we've already discussed, you need to have a chat with them. But you need to recognize that you have agency just like your husband. And then you can really ask from a place of empowerment, do I really want to eat that kind of thing all night? Do I want to deal with the negative effects of stressing my body out in that way? Remind yourself, this is your choice. And it's fair because you both have agency. It makes me remember a time when my husband and I were first married. And this is kind of an embarrassing story. And I'm not sure my husband would love that I'm sharing it, but he doesn't listen to my podcast. So just don't tell him about this if you run into him. But this happened almost 20 years ago. So we're well beyond this. It's okay. But when we first got married, my husband had been out of his childhood home and on his own for about 7 years by the time we got married. And his hygiene habits, particularly brushing his teeth, began kind of sliding during that time on his own. He didn't have a woman there to help keep him on track. Of course, he'd still brush his teeth, but he just wasn't super consistent and didn't floss and things like that. And when we got married, I happened to be a great brusher and flosser. And I continued to do really well for about the first year of our marriage to brush and floss every morning and night. But then I found myself after time and after noticing that he wasn't being as vigilant with his teeth, I found myself getting a little resentful and a little angry. And I was like, well, if he doesn't have to brush his teeth twice a day, then why should I have to brush mine? And I found myself kind of rebelling against brushing my teeth. And so every once in a while, I just wouldn't. I wouldn't brush him at night, or I wouldn't floss, or I just wouldn't try as hard to keep my teeth clean. And guess what happened? The next time I went to the dentist, I had like 6 cavities that I had to get filled. So who was really hurt in that situation? My husband wasn't hurt. Well, he kind of was because we both had to pay for those dental bills. But I was the one that got hurt. I was the one that had to get the cavities filled. I was only hurting myself because of my resentment to my husband's less than stellar dental habits. So since then, I'm happy to say that I'm back to being a good brusher and flosser. And my husband as well has jumped on board and realizes the importance of dental care. And he's actually very good now as well. But that's just an example of how we can let feelings of resent and jealousy lead us down some really unhelpful paths. So in the case of feeling unfair about the size or the shape of your body, you could also tell yourself, well, it actually is fair. It's fair that I have an amazing body that allows me to do so many things each day. And that is truly a miracle in how it runs. The fact that I'm alive at all is just a miracle, just like they do, just like the person in the smaller body has. We both have amazing bodies. Aren't we both so blessed? It's actually very fair. So as you can see, yes, you can make arguments for both cases. Yes, I can make arguments for why it's not fair in some ways and for why it is fair in other ways. So it can be helpful to point out both to your brain. So that's all I've got for you today. As a quick recap, those 4 R's that we're going to watch out for are resistance, rebellion and revenge, and resentment. And the first steps to changing or improving anything is always awareness. Once you become aware that one of these self-sabotaging R's might be creeping in, then you can recognize it and claim the power to stop it and not allow it to continue to keep you from making the changes you want and from achieving your goals and your dreams. I really hope this was helpful for you. Thank you so much for joining me today, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye. Hey, real quick before you go, if you found this episode helpful, could you do me a huge favor and take just a minute or two to leave me a rating and review? It really helps the show get found by more people, and it just lights me up to know that the show is helping someone out there and that I should continue putting out more episodes. Thank you so much.